Chapter 17. And she caught a word here and there. She understood that he was fleeing from white men, that he was seeking a hiding place, that he was in some danger. But she heard also words which woke the rage of jealousy that had been asleep for so many days in her bosom. Crouching low on the mud in the black darkness amongst the piles, she heard the whisper in the boat that made light of toil, of privation, of danger, of life itself. If in exchange there could be but a short moment of close embrace, a look from the eyes, the feel of light breath, the touch of soft lips. So spoke Dane as he sat in the canoe holding Nina's hands, while waiting for Bulangi's return, and Tamina, supporting herself by the slimy pile, felt as if a heavy weight was crushing her down, down into the black oily water at her feet. She wanted to cry out, to rush at them, and tear their vague shadows apart, to throw Nina into the smooth water, cling to her close, hold her to the bottom, where that man could not find her. She could not cry, she could not move. Then footsteps were heard on the bamboo platform above her head. She saw Bulangi get into his smallest canoe and take the lead, the other boat following, paddled by Dane and Nina. With a slight splash of the paddles dipped stealthily into the water, their indistinct forms passed before her aching eyes, and vanished in the darkness of the creek. She remained there in the cold and wet, powerless to move, breathing painfully under the crushing weight that the mysterious hand of fate had laid so suddenly upon her slender shoulders, and shivering, she felt within a burning fire that seemed to feed upon her very life. When the breaking day had spread a pale golden ribbon over the black outline of the forests, she took up her tray and departed towards the settlement, going about her task purely from the force of habit. As she approached Sambar, she could see the excitement and she heard with momentary surprise of the finding of Dane's body. It was not true, of course. She knew it well. She regretted that he was not dead. She should have liked Dane to be dead, so as to be parted from that woman from all women. She felt a strong desire to see Nina, but without any clear object. She hated her, and feared her, and she felt an irresistible impulse pushing her towards Almayer's house to see the white woman's face, to look close at those eyes, to hear again that voice, for the sound of which Dane was ready to risk his liberty, his life even. As he had seen her many times, as he had heard her voice daily for many months past. What was there in her? What was there in that being to make a man speak as Dane had spoken? To make him blind to all other faces, deaf to all other voices. She left the crowd by the riverside, and wandered aimlessly among the empty houses, resisting the impulse that pushed her towards Almayer's campong to seek there in Nina's eyes the secret of her own misery. The sun mounting higher, shortened the shadows and poured down upon her a flood of light, and of stifling heat as she passed on from shadow to light, from light to shadow, amongst the houses, the bushes, the tall trees, in her unconscious flight from the pain in her own heart. In the extremity of her distress she could find no words to pray for relief, she knew of no heaven to send her prayer to, and she wandered on with tired feet in the dumb surprise and terror at the injustice of the suffering inflicted upon her without cause and without redress. The short talk with Rashid, the proposal of Abdullah steadied her a little, and turned her thoughts into another channel. Dane was in some danger. He was hiding from white men. So much as he had overheard last night, they all thought him dead. She knew he was alive, and she knew of his hiding place. What did the Arabs want to know about the white men? The white men want with Dane? Did they wish to kill him? She could tell them all no, she would say nothing, and in the night she would go to him, and sell him his life for a word, for a smile, for a gesture even, and be his slave in far-off countries, away from Nina. But there were dangers. The one-eyed Babalichai who knew everything. The white man's wife, she was a witch. Perhaps they would tell. And then there was Nina. She must hurry on and see. In her impatience she left the path, and ran towards Almayer's dwelling through the undergrowth between the palm trees. She came out at the back of the house, where a narrow ditch, full of stagnant water that overflowed from the river, separated Almayer's campong from the rest of the settlement. The thick bushes growing on the bank were hiding from her sight the large courtyard with its cooking shed. Above them rose several thin columns of smoke, and from behind the sound of strange voices informed Tamina that the men of the sea belonging to the warship had already landed and were camped between the ditch and the house. To the left, one of Almayer's slave girls came down to the ditch and bent over the shiny water, washing a kettle. To the right, the tops of the banana plantation, visible above the bushes, swayed and shook under the touch of invisible hands gathering the fruit. On the calm water, several canoes moored to a heavy stake were crowded together, nearly bridging the ditch just at the place where Tamina stood. The voices in the courtyard rose at times into an outburst of calls, replies, and laughter, and then died away into a silence that soon was broken again by a fresh clamor. Now and again the thin blue smoke rushed out thicker and blacker, and drove in odorous masses over the creek, wrapping her for a moment in a suffocating veil. Then, as the fresh wood caught well alight, the smoke vanished in the bright sunlight, and only the scent of aromatic wood drifted afar, to leeward of the crackling fires. Tamina rested her tray on a stump of a tree, and remained standing with her eyes turned towards Almayer's house, whose roof and part of a whitewashed wall were visible over the bushes. The slave girl finished her work, and after looking for a while curiously at Tamina, pushed her way through the dense thicket back to the courtyard. Round Tamina there was now a complete solitude. She threw herself down on the ground, and hid her face in her hands. Now when so close as he had no courage to see Nina. At every burst of louder voices from the courtyard she shivered in the fear of hearing Nina's voice. She came to the resolution of waiting where she was till dark, and then going straight to Dane's hiding place. From where she was she could watch the movements of white men, of Nina, of all Dane's friends, and of all his enemies. Both were hateful alike to her, for both would take him away beyond her reach. She hid herself in the long grass, to wait anxiously for the sunset that seemed so slow to come. On the other side of the ditch, behind the bush, by the clear fires, the seamen of the frigate had encamped on the hospitable invitation of Almayer. Almayer, roused out of his apathy by the prayers and importunity of Nina, had managed to get down in time to the jetty so as to receive the officers at their landing. The lieutenant in command accepted his invitation to his house with the remark that in any case their business was with Almayer and perhaps not very pleasant, he added. Almayer hardly heard him. He shook hands with them absently and led the way towards the house. He was scarcely conscious of the polite words of welcome he greeted the strangers with, and afterwards repeated several times over again in his efforts to appear at ease. The agitation of their host did not escape the officer's eyes, and the chief confided to his subordinate, in a low voice, his doubts as to Almayer's sobriety. The young sub-lieutenant laughed and expressed in a whisper the hope that the white man was not intoxicated enough to neglect the offer of some refreshments. "He does not seem very dangerous," he added, as they followed Almayer up the steps of the veranda. "No, he seems more of a fool than a knave. I have heard of him," returned the senior. They sat around the table. Almayer with shaking hands made gin cocktails, offered them all round, and drank himself, with every gulp feeling stronger, steadier, and better able to face all the difficulties of his position. Ignorant of the fate of the brig, he did not suspect the real object of the officer's visit. He had a general notion that something must have leaked out about the gunpowder trade, but apprehended nothing beyond some temporary inconveniences. After emptying his glass he began to chat easily, lying back in his chair with one of his legs thrown negligently over the arm. The lieutenant astride on his chair, a glowing cheroot in the corner of his mouth, listened with a sly smile from behind the thick volumes of smoke that escaped from his compressed lips. The young sub-lieutenant, leaning with both elbows on the table, his head between his hands, looked on sleepily in the torpor induced by fatigue and the gin. Almayer talked on, "It is a great pleasure to see white faces here. I have lived here many years in great solitude. The Malays, you understand, are not company for a white man. Moreover, they are not friendly. They do not understand our ways. Great rascals they are. I believe I am the only white man on the East Coast that is a settled resident. We get visitors from Macassar or Singapore, sometimes traders, agents, or explorers, but they are rare. There was a scientific explorer here a year or more ago. He lived in my house. Drank from morning to night. He lived joyously for a few months, and when the liquor he brought with him was gone, he returned to Batavia with a report on the mineral wealth of the interior. Ha, ha, ha. Good, is it not?" He ceased abruptly, and looked at his guests with a meaningless stare. While they laughed, he was reciting to himself the old story: Colin Dane dead, all my plans destroyed. This is the end of all hope, and of all things. His heart sank within him. He felt a kind of deadly sickness. "Very good. Capital!" exclaimed both officers. Almayer came out of his despondency with another burst of talk. "Hey, what about the dinner? You have got a cook with you. That's all right. There is a cooking shed in the other courtyard. I can give you a goose. Look at my geese, the only geese on the East Coast, perhaps on the whole island. Is that your cook? Very good. Here, Ali, show this Chinaman the cooking place, and tell Mem Almayer to let him have room there. My wife, gentlemen, does not come out. My daughter may. Meantime, have some more drink. It is a hot day." The lieutenant took the cigar out of his mouth, looked at the ash critically, shook it off, and turned towards Almayer. "We have a rather unpleasant business with you," he said. "I am sorry," returned Almayer. "Tea can be nothing very serious, surely. If you think an attempt to blow up 40 men at least not a serious matter, you will not find many people of your opinion," retorted the officer sharply. "Blow up? What? I know nothing about it," exclaimed Almayer. "Who did that, or tried to do it?" "A man with whom you had some dealings," answered the lieutenant. "He passed here under the name of Dane Marula. You sold him the gunpowder he had in that brig we captured." "How did you hear about the brig?" asked Almayer. "Know nothing about the powder he may have had. An Arab trader of this place has sent the information about your goings on here to Batavia a couple of months ago," said the officer. "He were waiting for the brig outside, but he slipped, passed us at the mouth of the river, and we had to chase the fellow to the southward. When he sighted us, he ran inside the reefs and put the brig ashore. The crew escaped in boats before we could take possession. As our boats neared the craft, it blew up with a tremendous explosion. One of the boats, being too near, got swamped. Two men drowned. That is the result of your speculation, Mr. Almayer. Now we want this Dane. We have good grounds to suppose he is hiding in Sambor. Do you know where he is? You had better put yourself right with the authorities as much as possible by being perfectly frank with me. Where is this Dane?" Almayer got up and walked towards the balustrade of the veranda. He seemed not to be thinking of the officer's question. He looked at the body laying straight and rigid under its white cover, on which the sun, declining amongst the clouds to the westward, threw a pale tinge of red. The lieutenant waited for the answer, taking quick pulls at his half-extinguished cigar. Behind them, Ally moved noiselessly, laying the table, ranging solemnly the ill-assorted and shabby crockery, the tin spoons, the forks with broken prongs, and the knives with saw-like blades and loose handles. He had almost forgotten how to prepare the table for white men. He felt aggrieved. Mem Nina would not help him. He stepped back to look at his work admiringly, feeling very proud. This must be right. And if the master afterwards is angry and swears, then so much the worse for Mem Nina. Why did she not help? He left the veranda to fetch the dinner. Well, Mr. Elmayer, will you answer my question as frankly as it is put to you? Asked the lieutenant, after a long silence. Elmayer turned round and looked at his interlocutor steadily. If you catch this Dane, what will you do with him? He asked. The officer's face flushed. His is not an answer, he said, annoyed. And what will you do with me? Went on Elmayer, not heeding the interruption. Are you inclined to bargain? Growled the other. Tea would be bad policy, I assure you. At present I have no orders about your person, but we expected your assistance in catching this Malay. Ah! Interrupted Elmayer, just so. You can do nothing without me, and I, knowing the man well, am to help you in finding him. This is exactly what we expect, assented the officer. You have broken the law, Mr. Elmayer, and you ought to make amends. And save myself? Well, in a sense yes. Your head is not in any danger, said the lieutenant, with a short laugh. Very well, said Elmayer, with decision, I shall deliver the man up to you. Both officers rose to their feet quickly, and looked for their sidearms which they had unbuckled. Elmayer laughed harshly. Steady, gentlemen, he exclaimed. In my own time, and in my own way. After dinner, gentlemen, you shall have him. This is preposterous, urged the lieutenant. Mr. Elmayer, this is no joking matter. The man is a criminal. He deserves to hang. While we dine he may escape. The rumor of our arrival, Elmayer walked towards the table. Give you my word of honor, gentlemen, that he shall not escape. I have him safe enough. The arrest should be effected before dark, remarked the young sub. I shall hold you responsible for any failure. We are ready, but can do nothing just now without you, added the senior, with evident annoyance. Elmayer made a gesture of assent. And my word of honor, he repeated vaguely. And he now let us dine, he added briskly. Nina came through the doorway and stood for a moment holding the curtain aside for Ally, and the old Malay woman bearing the dishes. Then she moved towards the three men by the table. Allow me, said Elmayer, pompously. His is my daughter. Nina, these gentlemen, officers of the frigate outside, have done? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.